and welcome to the 77th, can you believe it, 77th episode of The Big Web Show, Everything Web That Matters. I'm your host, Jeffrey Zeldman, and today's guest is web designer, speaker, Virgo, and perfectionist, Sarah Parmenter. We'll be speaking to her in just a moment, but first I'd like to thank our sponsor, namely Shutterstock.com. Sarah, can you say that?
Shutterstock,
where you'll find over 20 million stock photos, vectors, illustrations, and video clips. Start your search at Shutterstock.com to find that perfect image for your website, ad, publication, or any other creative project. Sign up for a free account. Go to Shutterstock.com. No credit card needed. That's a plus. When you find the images you like and decide to purchase, use the following offer code to get 30% off any package. The offer code for the Big Web Show is, are you ready? Big Web Show 11, all one word. So go to Shutterstock.com, type in Big Web Show 11 when you're ready to purchase and get 30% off photos, vectors, etc., etc. And with no further ado, I'd like to introduce today's guest. Sarah won Designer of the Year at the .NET Awards last year. She specializes in user interface design for iOS devices. I can't talk today. iOS devices and the web. Speaks at web conferences around the world, etc., etc. Sarah, let's talk about some of the things that you've been involved with lately, such as the government teaching kids to code.
Yeah, the government's... the
government of the UK.
Yeah, the government of the UK are trying very hard to push push more kind of techie jobs in the way of school leavers, because children are coming out of school and not understanding the kind of opportunities that there are available to them in the tech industry. My little assistant, Catherine, she came to me and had absolutely no idea. It came about because I spoke at a thing for her school, and then she came up to me afterwards and said, "Oh, what is this? What is this coding thing? And I think I'd like to do it." And I took her on for work experience, and now she's my full time assistant, project manager type person. She does a lot of the running around for me.
And you know who?
Yeah, you know who, and she's been learning HTML and CSS, and now she's learning C programming, actually, so that she can actually learn to do iOS development with me. So we're hoping to team up and be like an all-female iOS development house.
Cool. So
yeah, she's really smart, but when she left school and she said to them, I've got a full-time job at this small design studio, they tried to push her into university, into college, because they didn't believe that you could go into something like this without having any kind of formal qualifications. And I think the government are really trying to change people's perceptions of what the tech industry is, that it's not for a subset of very geeky people. And they're trying to push more things in the eye line of actually going from quite young. There's some initiatives, which I'm not entirely sure what they are at the moment. I know they're trying to push it over the next year and going forward. But so I've been
asked... So young Britons can compete with India?
I have no idea.
What's driving it?
I think it's a case of the government recognise that a heck of a lot of stuff is obviously everything's going digital, and even in my husband's work, he works in an internet division of a crime agency, and they haven't got enough people there either to fulfil the job requirements, because there's a certain amount of coding skills that are needed. So they train a lot of people up because there's not many people coming out with those skills. So I think it's just...
So you could learn HTML and be a crime fighter?
Yeah, that is without going into too much of what they do. Yeah, they need people with web skills of various sorts. And they normally find people who are right for the job first and then train them up into the skills that they need. But a heck of a lot of people over here are learning off of their own back. There are no decent courses, really. I mean, I know some friends of mine run what I would consider one of the only decent courses in the UK over in Belfast. But aside from that, it's not on school leavers' radars, really, unless they've got into it through some other means. So the government are trying to desperately push it in a better light, I think. But how they're quite doing that, I'm not entirely sure. I know that there's a television programme happening next year, which is backed by the initiative, which hopefully will be going ahead in May for filming, which they've said that they'd like me to be a judge on, which is fabulous.
Okay, you're going to be on TV.
Yeah. Well, providing I get through the screen test type audition things and can string a sentence together.
So there's a TV show about technology?
Yeah, what they're doing is they're...
It's about the education initiative or...
It's less about, I guess it's less traditional as in like these are the courses you can go and do. What they're actually doing is just trying to make it a bit cool, I think. So they're sending everyone off to an island just off of Bristol and filming for 10 days straight in 10 teams of designers and developers to show how web apps, traditional apps are made. They're given a brief and then everyone designs these apps. That's what they've been told the format is going to be.
So it's Survivor for designers and coders.
Yeah, basically.
Do you go native? Do you still, I mean,
I have no idea whether it will be apps for iOS, apps for Android, or whether it will be web apps. I'm hoping in some ways it'll be web apps because I think that would be a better thing to push for younger people. But either way, it'll get coding out to the masses, hopefully.
Yeah. So how did they find you?
It's a guy who I think has followed me on Twitter for a while. He asked me to speak at his conference and I couldn't. And then he spoke to me on the off chance that I might be interested in doing it in conjunction with another iOS coder who's here, who's also a web coder, which makes me think that they're going to tread the board of two camps. Maybe they're going to be doing native iOS and web apps. And he just asked me, as many of these things happen out of the blue. And I said, yes. So everything, the ball is rolling on that part, but whether there'll be delays and everything with television stuff as there normally is. But
what would happen to your client services work?
Well, it's only 10 days straight filming. So it would just be a case of almost booking holiday like any other holiday. And I'll leave all the inquiries in Catherine's hands, who's my little assistant. I'll leave everything in her hands and just head off to Bristol for 10 days of intense filming and then probably have the evenings to myself to work, hopefully.
Bristol, for people not familiar with it, Bristol's away, it's an old maritime town, right? It's an old naval town.
Yeah.
Ship-shaped Bristol fashion.
Yeah, it's on the west coast of England. It's a really pretty old town. But this place that we're filming is on an island called Flatholm. Apparently it's like a mile wide and deep and it's tiny and there's only accommodation for about 10 people. So I'm not sure how they're going to actually do that. But
and they have the internet there?
Apparently so. Apparently so. I'm not actually sure what's on this island as it's so small, but I'm imagining they're going to be setting up something.
What's the name of the show?
It's called Objective C. But
that's the name of the TV show?
Yeah.
Objective C.
C as in S-E-A.
Oh.
They're doing a play on.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So if this happened, when would this happen? In May?
Yeah, they're filming in May, but I've been told that it's gonna go out in around September, October time in the autumn, which coincides with the new school year over here as well, which I imagine hasn't been done by chance.
So you'll be able to get more notice for your company, I imagine.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm more interested in the side of things where inspiring young people to actually come into the industry. I know that sounds really cheesy, but it's something that I find is quite important to me after getting Catherine on board, who traditionally is one of these people, if she walked down the street, you'd probably presume she was in fashion or something very girly.
What would you have done? You were in theater before you discovered technology, right?
I was actually in TV. I was doing TV stuff and then didn't get a part. There was two major series that were over here and I was down to the last two for two of them. And then I'd kind of in my head thought, well, I'm bound to get one of them. So I'd made that kind of life in my head over those 2 weeks where I was waiting to hear from the network. I'd made this fantasy life of, oh, and then I get to go to these kind of swanky parties and have a lovely apartment in London. And then when I got the call saying, we've decided to go elsewhere, it completely shattered me. And I went back to kind of doing web stuff that I was doing on the side. So I never ventured back into that industry after that.
It's interesting because I also had other things I wanted to do that I failed at, or I don't know if fail's really the right word, but I got the same kind of like big rejection. Like I submitted a novel to a publishing house and through a writer who had a very successful writer who said, oh, I love this. I want to show it to my publisher. And I went one step further than you. I didn't just fantasize about it. I told my friends. I told everybody, oh, I'm going to be published by such and such. And yeah, like it was a done deal. And then after 6 months, they returned the manuscript unopened.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so thank goodness for the web, huh?
Yeah. Well, it took me a while to get back into it because it seemed, it didn't seem mundane, that would be the wrong word, but it seemed like I had such a steep learning curve to overcome before I could actually do anything with it. But it took me a while to get into it and feel like, no, actually this place is my home. So I've never wanted to go backwards in case I felt out of place again or lost how I feel about the industry now.
Do you feel like the learning curve is steeper now?
Yes, actually with having to teach, well, I've been teaching a friend on the side as well who's been trying to get into the industry as well. And what I found is really difficult is the order of things, because when I learned with table-based and then made the transition from table-based to divs, you know, and so on and so on. So I feel throughout my career, I've kind of been able to almost keep tapping things onto my skill set, whereas now it's kind of, we throw all this stuff at them and we go, okay, now you know the basics of HTML and CSS. We're going to kind of flip it on its head and we want you to think about responsive design. And then with responsive design, we now want you to think about CSS preprocessors. And it's kind of like, where do we fit all these things together to put it back into a logical order for newbies? I think that's really hard at the moment.
So how did you teach Catherine?
I started with the basics of HTML, and then I taught her how we then can tap on classes and IDs, which are then used in CSS, and then taught her the basics of CSS combined, obviously, with HTML.
What was your curriculum?
Books. Lots and lots of books, really. I would take PSD files that I was doing, print them off, hand them over to her, and actually get her to kind of draw out on paper. And that's what I did with my friend as well, is draw out logical boxes so that made sense of where the divs would be and then explain about the side of things like that. But it's been really hard, especially when, like I said, you go into responsive stuff and you're kind of like, okay, now I know we did this pixel based, but now actually I want you to learn it in percentages, and maybe I should have actually taught it in percentages to start with, but I never learned percentage to start with, so I find it really hard to actually logically visualize things in percentages at all without doing all the math that goes with it. So I still work on, okay, that needs to be around 300 pixels because that I know what that is in my brain.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult for them. I actually feel a bit sorry for them if you're starting from scratch. And as well, there's always going to be someone who's better than you and has already found their place in the industry, which is what I feel really sorry for newbies about, because there's no longer this kind of, oh, that's the CSS guy. There's the new CSS guy. There's already like geniuses with CSS. So for them to actually get to that kind of level is a lot harder.
How is the teaching going to be addressed in the government initiative? I mean, you said, I imagine you're involved in some way and you want to help inspire people, but you obviously you can't take everyone in hand personally and say, here's Andy Clark's book and here's this book and here's that book. And you can't personally teach everyone. So what's going to happen?
I don't know, actually. I'm not entirely sure what normally the way that things work over here is obviously we just have a curriculum and they put things into the curriculum. What I'm hoping they don't do is stick modules into the curriculum. I think it almost needs to be its own thing within what children are learning. I hope that they don't tap it on as an addition to IT skills. I think it needs to be its own thing, even if they have an hour every 2 weeks or something. But I'm not entirely sure what the official stance is going to be on that yet. I'm not sure they're even sure what it is, except that they know that they want to be pushing coding.
I know that in America, well, my daughter's in second grade and they have some kind of like media skills program, and it's a public school. It's not a private. I don't know if those mean the same. I always get confused about that between England and America, but it's just a regular school anyone can go to that tax dollars pay for. It's not a fancy school, but so I know that they always have like computer learning or computing. I don't think they're teaching them HTML, but you know, if they're teaching them grammar and they're teaching them spelling, they're teaching them reading, it seems like HTML isn't going to, I mean, I don't think HTML is going to go away in the next 50 years, do you?
No, not at all.
It seems like the same way they used to teach Latin,
mm-hmm.
so that you'd understand medical words when you saw them, just because you understood Latin or whatever their rationale was. I don't know.
I just hope that they don't think that we're going to have the tools in place to do this stuff for them. Therefore, it's not important. That's the only thing that I worry, is that we've got so good at having various tools that do things for everyone.
Oh, like a web InDesign?
Yeah, like almost what you see is what you get editors, so therefore they don't need to touch the code side of things. Whereas I think actually, as basic as HTML is, it inspires you in other languages. You kind of get that. I don't think you ever forget the time when you've built something and you press that button to see what you built and you go, oh my goodness, it worked. You can't replicate that feeling. And it inspires you to try other forms of code. So I just hope that they don't go along the lines of, you know, well, we don't need to teach our children this because there's going to be all these newfangled things that do it for them, because actually it inspires other things.
Well, I think it's like you can get a certain result with an autofocus camera, and that's not the same as learning photography, right?
No.
And you can buy a keyboard that'll make up a bass line for you. That's not the same as learning music. And, you know, I don't even begin to know how people who make WYSIWYG tools, WYSIWYG design tools, folks like Adobe, I don't even know how they're even thinking. I know they are thinking very seriously about responsive design and all that, but I don't know how. How do you address, you know, making a semantic structure first? And, you know, if you're starting with a visual.
Yeah, completely agree. You can't.
You can't. So education will continue to be a challenge. What are you making with? What are you working on now? Do you have any redesigns in the pipe? Or
I've been working on the same app practically. Well, I'm doing an internal application for News International, which are a big news agency. They're the ones that just got busted for privacy stuff over here. They have the Sun and the Daily Mail and the The Times, sorry. The Sunday Times and
Is it Rupert Murdoch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm doing an internal app for them, but I've been working on this app for iOS, actually. It's been a really interesting process because it's been on the go for 2 years and it's meant to be coming out next week. And I've been told that when it does come out, it will be the most reviewed app by Apple that they've ever had, because it has conflicted so badly with Newsstand all along the way that we have been going backwards and forwards to just try and get it past them.
Why? What? How do you differ from Newsstand?
They have a patented technology which is running in the background, which enables you to, well, it's more for the publishers. The publishers get paid on a per second basis rather than a download basis. So they actually know what you're reading. So for a single monthly fee.
Oh, hence the privacy issue.
It's two different companies that are doing this. It's similar, but two separate ones. So they've got something really interesting because it's a one price model. So for a flat fee, you get access to practically every magazine that you would walk down the road and find in your newsstand. And then the magazines get paid on a per second basis, rather than, as I said, on download.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's kind of like the model. Do you remember Readability? I mean, they still exist, but do you remember when they were doing the financial thing?
No.
It was kind of similar. It was like whoever you were reading, that's who got paid.
Oh, okay.
So they sort of, you know, you opted in, and if you were a user and whoever, whatever you happened to be looking at, that's the author that would get paid. That was done on a per page basis, not a per second basis. So
obviously similar.
Different, but the idea is you pay for the content producer, you get paid by the view or by the second. So is it like, do they get paid well? I know that there's recently been an expose about how poorly musicians are paid on, you know, Spotify and Audio and everything. There's lots of services that let you listen to music you haven't bought, and they do pay the musicians, but it's not very much.
I don't actually know because I'm not involved in that financial side of things, but I would assume that it must be good enough for them to be on board because they've actually, it's not like they've gone to, there's no middleman involved. They've actually gone to the likes of Vogue, Elle, Esquire, Direct, and they've all come on board of their own choice. It's not like they've been bought in from a package or the company that owns them or a bigger firm. They've all come on board under their own steam. So I would assume that it must be financially worthwhile for them to do that based on the amount of publishers who have actually turned around and said, absolutely, we want to be on this platform. But as far as tangible figures are concerned, I have no idea. But I would just assume from the take up of the publishers involved that it must be fairly okay, if not on par with their own their own stuff that they're doing on the App Store.
How do you design an app that basically contains every magazine that's bought into this thing and present them and monitor the user? I mean, what's...
It's been a massive design challenge on a couple of fronts. When they first came to me 2 years ago, they had the basic design down, but it didn't fit very well with the types of different content. Not only are we dealing with different content, but actually from a design point of view, the magazines are all different sizes as well. So we had to sort of do something that would allow the design to expand, but not cram as well, which was really important, but also not detract from what you're actually reading. So it's been, the design's really quite simple. I've teared everything out that they had before and removed all the complexity from it, really, and made it much more about the magazine.
How? Now, what did you just basically, did you create new templates? And they go back, taking your templates, they go back to Vogue or Mademoiselle or whatever and say, this is how your articles will appear in our app and get buy-in? How does that work?
What they did was they sort of let me do my thing for 2 weeks, come up with a completely new user interface design, which I did on paper to start with. And then I was sending them quite crude, like sketches of everything. Like, this is what I'm thinking. For example, they had to favorite magazines or to show that they were part of the Anytime plan. The Anytime is when you pay the fixed fee and you can view as much as you want. You had to actually tap into the magazine to then see more details on it. So what they wanted was a way of showing all of these things and being able to favorite the magazine right from the panel where you've got the way you're presented with all the different magazines in a certain genre. So I came up with like some side tabs that just sit really nicely next to all the magazines, but don't detract from it. They sort of
like a navigational tab from.
Yeah, they're kind of, so you've got a list of magazines and then they sit behind almost just like little, little tabs that sit behind each of the magazines. And from there you can see whether it's in your favorites, whether you want to favorite it, you just click it and it favorites it and it shows up with a yellow tab with a star on it. But it all doesn't detract from anything that you might then want to do. So what they did was they took those designs, they put them into an ad hoc build, and then they took them to the publishers and said, we've loaded this example content in, because they already had a lot of the publishers on board, because the white label systems that the likes of Vogue and Elle and the big places were using was their system that they sold them in the first place.
Okay.
So it was easier for them to go to them and say, look, this is the content that you've submitted this month to this. Well, this is what it would look like in Reader.
That's the name of the app?
Yeah. Reader, but not as in the RSS reader. It's.
And will I be able to get this in America or only in England? Anyone? Yeah. So anyone can buy it, get it anywhere. It's a free app and then you pay for the content.
Well, you get 20 minutes free every month to use across any magazine that you want. And then after your 20 minutes has run out, you can then purchase a plan, which I think will sit around $9.99 a month for access to any content that you want.
And you've looked at it in, is it just for Apple's platform or is it?
No, that was when stuff got really interesting, because BlackBerry then came along and
BlackBerry.
Said, yeah.
BlackBerry. Okay.
BlackBerry came along and said that they also wanted the platform, but they didn't want it named as the app name. They wanted to kind of white label it. So then we had this interesting porting issue that happened, because it was right when the BlackBerry Playbook came out, and then they wanted it to go on BlackBerry Playbook, and then BlackBerry 10 operating system came out and everything suddenly went on its head, and it didn't port very well from iOS to BlackBerry because of the sizes being different, various things not working, not being able to fit enough content. So I was working on the BlackBerry designs as well, which was a very interesting learning curve for someone who's dealt with iOS.
And the dimensions are all different, obviously, and there's real touchable, there's real buttons that users expect to use. So some things that I would imagine some of the touch goes away, right? Some of the iOS is all about engage with the content, touch it, like Windows 8 is the same, but BlackBerry would be more now utilize your keyboard to, right? You utilize the arrow on your keyboard. I mean, how do you?
Oh, it was an interesting one, because I was more involved with when it actually, there's been so many iterations for BlackBerry. The main one I was involved with was BlackBerry Playbook. And that was really interesting, because the black area around the edge of the BlackBerry Playbook is what's used to invoke menus. It's such a different interface to the iPad that it took me, they sent me one and it took me ages to get my head around designing for those kind of things. And not to mention the actual design style guide is completely different.
When they send you something like that, do they also give you an account to use so you can actually see how other people's content looks on, you know, how apps look, how other people's content looks on the real web? As obviously you can't afford as a designer to get a BlackBerry account and get a, you know, get, you can't afford to get separate accounts for each of the devices you have to test on. So if you're really going to steep yourself in a device, how do you go about that?
I was lucky because they sent me the actual devices free of charge to design on the platform. So I think I was really lucky like that, where they just literally just sent me a ton of stuff to design on. They didn't send me a phone, which was when we got to designing for the phone, they didn't send me one of those because they were kind of dealing with it in a very hybrid manner by that point, where they were dealing with some of it in-house and I was tasked with designing some of the screens. So it became a much more collaborative affair at that point. So I was less involved with the stuff for BlackBerry 10 in the end.
So here you are, a small team. You have an administrative person, and then basically you are the designer, coder, yep. And you've got, earlier you talked about handing it off to their developers so that they could do an ad hoc build. I mean, stuff like that must be terrifying, right? Because if they get it wrong and the whole thing gets killed because a developer didn't understand what your intention was.
Yeah.
How do you communicate with folks, and how do you attain a comfort level in terms of design control?
They've been fantastic with me, probably one of the best clients I've ever worked with, because they've let me do my thing. But they've understood, you know, when I say they'll have something on their desk, it's there, and we have this really great relationship. But generally, stuff will get implemented wrong by developers. It's just the nature of it. We, regardless of how many meetings of discussing things, but right. What we were actually doing was using Keynote transitions for a lot of the... for some of the more intricate side of the user interface, we've got pull down like tabs and things like that. So when I wanted to actually illustrate what it would look like, I was going into Keynote with lots of different PNG files and actually using Keynote transitions and then sending them the Keynote. They'd press play and then they'd see how it would work.
So it sounds like for some parts of the design process, you're sending drawings. For some, you're sending Keynote. What, do you ever do Photoshop comps still? I mean,
yeah, they were all, everything was Photoshop comps. I counted the amount of Photoshop files in their folder the other day, and there was 397 Photoshop files.
Good Lord. And you had made all those.
And I'd made every single one of them.
And you're a one-person team.
Yeah, which is why things get pretty crazy sometimes.
So before you had Catherine, you had to do your own billing and everything else too, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever, I mean, when... HappyCog started with just me also. And that was the worst part of it for me. Like I could never keep track of who had paid me, or when I worked with freelancers, you know, I would sometimes pay someone twice and just forget. I mean,
yep. That was one of my main reasons for realizing that I needed someone else, was because I recognized myself that standards were majorly slipping last year. It was this year, the beginning of this year. I recognized that I was getting a heck of a lot of emails coming in saying, just checking in, I sent you an email 4 days ago and you've not responded, and I'm just checking. And I was like, and I was constantly feeling almost sad, and that sort of anxious feeling of never feeling caught up on anything properly. So I kind of recognized that standards were just starting to slip, even though my work wasn't. It was actually the administrative side of things that were really going downhill.
I had a client, basically the only seriously bad client interaction we've ever had, where we ended up walking away before it was finished. And I hate to, you know, but really, I think the downfall was we didn't have a project manager at the time. So I was a creative director and project manager, and that's a good creative director, but I'm a bad project manager. I didn't know that this gentleman really needed me to call him every day and say, here's what we're doing today. Because I wouldn't need that.
No.
But he did. And there's nothing wrong with him for needing that. But he in his mind, he was paying money, but he didn't know what was happening on his project, and he would start to get anxious and get angry, and he'd have this whole emotional, it was like Groucho Marx getting angry in Duck Soup and then socking the guy before he even walks in the room, because he's fantasizing about what happens if this guy would be angry every time he talked to me. So there is that. How big do you think, I mean, okay, so circumstances can conspire to teach you, okay, I'm really good at this and that. I can make 390 Photoshop comps, and I can draw, and I can work with all these developers and learn these new platforms, but I'm, you know, not so great on billing or whatever, or I don't necessarily answer my emails every day. How big do you see yourself getting? Do you think you're going to bring in like a full-time developer at any point?
Yeah, I mean, in my head, I've only ever wanted to get to a team of six.
Wow. Who are they? What are the roles?
What I would like, ideally, is another designer. So it's me as the main sort of creative director and user interface designer. Then Catherine to do project management type stuff. Another designer. I'd really like an ace copywriter who would sit in-house and know everything there is to know about content strategy and dealing with that side of things, because I don't think I could do my job properly without pulling in those guys anyway. I'd like two developers, an iOS developer and a web developer, who was kind of jack of all trades on that front. And that would be my dream team.
What about backend?
That's what I meant by developer, backend developer, who kind of knew like Ruby and those kind of languages for the web. And that would be my dream team. I'd just like it where everyone was responsible for their own portion of a project. And if we needed to pull in freelancers for additional help, then so be it. But that no one sits underneath a manager in some ways. That's really important to me some reason.
Flat organization. I mean,
yeah, that's what I would like.
And would you stay in Leon C?
Yeah, this is a hard one.
For listeners, Leon C is that's where your business, that's where you live, and that's where you run your business out of, right?
Yeah,
and it's a small town.
Yeah, it is a small. It's like a small fishing town, almost.
Not teeming with Ruby experts and.
Right. In fact, we have hardly any creative kind of people here. There's no real community. There's no sense of community like you get if you're in like Brooklyn or New York or any of the bigger places, even London. We don't have anything like that. I tried to sort of gauge whether we did have creative people last Christmas and sort of say, hey, freelancers, let's do a Christmas meal. And I think there was nine of us or something. So, it's not big on technology down here. So I'm not sure whether it would be a team of, having worked remotely with people, I think I need people in the office. So yeah. Whether I then move to where the best people are or what happens, I'm not entirely sure. But
or you train up those students.
Well, this is what I'm thinking is that's what I would love. I would love to just pick the right people, pick the people who have got bundles of energy and enthusiasm. I would rather have that and train those people up than have someone who's like, yeah, I'm an amazing Ruby developer. And you're like, but you kind of don't fit with, it sounds awful, but like the personality of the people in the office. And
that's important. The company culture is important. It's kind of easy to control the company culture when it's just you or it's just you and one person. Once you start getting into a bigger thing, it's really important that people get along.
And yeah.
I know we've sometimes let really, really wonderful people go because of some lack of fit emotionally, just like wanting different things.
Well, it's a huge part of your life. When you think you're in an office for 8-9 hours a day or whatever, and if you're with people who bring you down or don't fit with the rest of the company, I can imagine it would be, I couldn't have it. I could not have someone in my office at the moment who, especially not at the moment, who's making me depressed or anything like that. So in some ways I would rather find youngsters and train them up and have an awesome studio like that. But then it would also worry me that the experience level would be very, very low. I'm finding stuff with Catherine that I just presume she would know because I feel like I've been in the industry forever.
How long have you been in?
10 years in January. Yeah.
Oh, that's just in another month and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. The business is 10 years in January, but I was doing it sort of 4 years before that as well. So, it's been a while.
Yeah. That's scary when you realize that, isn't it?
Yeah, very. But wonderful at the same time.
Yes.
I feel very blessed that I get up each morning and I don't have that kind of, you know, work blues. I never think, oh gosh, we're going to work today. I don't have that on a Monday morning or, you know, even after having a month off last month, I actually couldn't wait. After one of the most depressing eras of my life, I couldn't wait to get back to work. And I think that told me everything I needed to know in some ways.
We're very lucky. I think
we
just had a Thanksgiving holiday here yesterday where that was nice. And it's just it's about family. And then, of course, being Americans, the next day we have a shopping frenzy where we're so grateful for the things we have. We want more. We want more. I don't know where I was going with that, actually.
That's all right.
No, that's sad.
Being thankful for being in a good industry.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
I read your mind.
You did. You did. That was a little scary. Oh, man, I hate when that happens. You're just like, wow. So at the beginning of the show, I couldn't talk, and toward the end, I forgot what I was talking about. But nevertheless, here we are. What else are you thinking of doing in AAPS for yourself? Do you have anything in the pipeline? Any ideas?
Yes, I'm doing an app, a personal app, with my friend Tom McLeod, who's based in San Francisco. And we wanted to do an app for the homeless, actually, which not for the homeless to use.
Right.
That would have been a bit strange. But for those times when you want to give, but you don't know whether you want to give them cash because you're not sure what they might do with it. But what we wanted to do is do like a geolocation-based app where you could donate $5, $10, whatever you would have given the person, but that it goes directly to the nearest homeless shelter from where you're standing at that point. And then
what a magnificent idea.
Yeah, we're really excited about it because it was
How did you guys think of that?
It was a couple of things. It came out of a Skype call that we were talking about, and it was actually, I think we were talking about something to do with my mum and stuff that she'd instilled in me because obviously I lost my mum last month. And we were talking about this, that mum had always taught me, oh, don't give homeless people money. If you want to do something, go and buy them a sandwich or get them a drink or a coffee or give it to them directly. And that's all very well until we were in New York City and I wanted to buy every homeless person food. And then we were standing at one of the trucks on the side of the road on like Fifth Avenue. And a food truck. And one of the homeless people that we were actually buying this huge hamburger and this massive coffee for was standing behind us in the line. And when we said, oh, actually, we just bought you this, he was like, oh, seriously? Does it have cheese in it? I was like, oh, no, you're not an actual genuine homeless person. So, it came about it was mostly his idea, actually. And then we just sort of said, he's setting up a not-for-profit. I think you call them not-for-profit businesses. And then
what do you call them in England?
Charities.
See, why can't we say that? That's better.
Yeah,
everyone knows what a charity is.
Yeah, we just call them a charity organization.
Tom McLeod is like such a superhero name. That is a great name. But what does Tom McLeod do?
He's kind of an entrepreneur and I normally hate that word, but that is exactly what he is. He has an app called Frametastic, which has done a ridiculous amount of downloads. He told me about it. 4.2 million downloads. It was one of the top framing apps for iOS. And he has various other sort of bits and pieces on the side that he does. He's got another app called Page Lime, and he's just an all-round good guy who's involved in the industry, really. I met him when we did Future Web Design New York a couple of years back, and then came home and found out that he was the ex-boyfriend of one of my friends at home as well.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
I love how that stuff happens. The odds, if you think about the odds, they're so astronomical that you start... It makes it harder to believe that things are just random in the universe if you're of the mind that they are.
I tend to sit on the mindset that they're not, but that's
something
you never start on Twitter that I've learned about. Never start with all that on Twitter. Interesting arguments.
You can't actually even talk about pixels versus percentages on Twitter.
Oh my goodness. I was talking about less versus SAS over the last
do it.
And that started a war. I was like, wow. Wow, people are really passionate about their CSS precompilers.
They're dogmatic too, though. That's what I'm finding lately. You gave a talk recently where you were saying this. It's design. It's not religion, people. And I really take that as inspiration. But I think for whatever reason, as an industry, we tend to like seize on something and go, "This is the only way to do this," and anyone who does this another way is wrong. And I don't know whether there's security and conformity or what that's about.
Yeah, we do. That design is not religion quotes from Brad Frost, who I think is amazing. Mm. But I think it's a funny old thing, actually, because I think it takes a certain person to actually say, oh, I'm not sure I have been using the right app for such and such. I know Andy Clark just said, oh, I'm actually switching from less to SaaS because I've realized X, Y, and Z. And I think if more people were a bit more honest about the reasons for suddenly switching, or, you know, this isn't quite working the way that I think it will, and just being open. Like last week at Build Conference, I've been doing plain old vanilla CSS for... Mm-hmm. Since I learned how to do it. And I noticed that everyone was talking about SAS and less and stuff. So I kind of threw my arms in the air when we were all within a group. And I thought, I'm going to make myself look really stupid here in amongst super intelligent people. But I feel like I have to ask it. So I went, right, can someone please explain SAS to me? How does it work? Because I'm so far behind with it. And why is it different to normal CSS? And all of a sudden I had six people with laptops all sat around me going, this is great. You know, this is what it does. And we can do this. And it saves you time because you can do this, this, and this. And I was like, okay, I'm converted. It just, sometimes it just takes you sort of going, I don't know about this. I want.
Did you convert?
Yeah, I've been learning SAS this week.
Wow.
It doesn't work with the tools or my workflow that I use at all. That's my main problem, but it shouldn't put me off using it.
I mean, I work with some really brilliant people who don't use GitHub, right? You know, you don't have to use, just because something's really working for someone else's or a lot of people's workflow, that's great, but it doesn't mean it works for yours. I think that's okay too. I think there's nothing wrong with writing just plain CSS.
Yeah.
Depends what you want to do.
I started because I'm doing a new site design at the moment, and I started going along the lines of, okay, well, if I chip away at my own site and put it into SAS, then I'll learn it properly for client stuff. And I found that I was having to refer backwards so much to what I'd called like the mix-ins and things like that, that I was flipping more than just writing CSS out again. It was taking me longer to flip between stuff to actually see what I'd called something than to just write it again.
Well, that's the learning process though.
Yeah. But
it's like when we went from tables to CSS layout. That was brutal. It seems for the kids who didn't grow up this way, who never did table layouts, they don't even get why it was a problem.
I remember the day I switched. I remember the day I switched vividly.
Especially when you had to deal with IE5 and IE6.
Yeah.
Right? Come on.
Yeah.
And when I switched to CSS layout, we had to deal with Netscape 4. It's brutal. It was like, you know.
The kids these days don't know how good they've got it.
And we liked it. Did you ever remember Dana Carvey? The comedian from Saturday Night Live, and he would do the thing like, we didn't have butter. We made our own butter with snot and blood, and we liked it. It's just that thing. And then he was really funny. And then Church Lady, no?
No.
You don't have Saturday Night Live, not even on Hulu or YouTube.
I'm British. British. I don't have any of these wonderful things.
You have
BBC. We have
You have what?
We have castles and the Queen.
You do.
And we all sit around drinking tea at 5 p.m. With a hobnob.
You have a lot of history, which is nice. And some really...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do, but I still want to live in your country.
Okay. That'll be good. So maybe that's how you'll do the six... That's how you'll have your six people dream team.
I hope so. I'd really like to live in Brooklyn, I think, out of everywhere. I kind of fell in love with Brooklyn. But you guys have crazy immigration laws and things.
Yes, we do. It's sad.
I feel like I'd need some kind of special talent that an American doesn't possess. So
You can get letters. No, you get letters. I've done that to help people. I mean,
but I kind of feel like that. I don't know. I sort of feel what? It's like when the Canadian border control man said to me, "Why are you coming over for a conference? What makes you qualified to talk at a conference against someone else?" And I thought, "Oh no, I don't like picking myself up."
Yeah, my dad used to lecture for Canadian management, and used to go, and then it got tough. After September 11th, the Canadians were like, you know, unhappy having Americans come over, and Americans were unhappy having Canadians come over. I'm like, wow.
Seems crazy.
It does. It does. It seems sad. Couldn't a Canadian do this? Well, sure. That probably a Canadian could. But anyway.
I found Canada harder to get into than America. Far harder. It was much more, many, many more questions than I ever get at the U.S. border.
But we love Canada.
Yeah.
But we love Canada.
But we love Canada. Yeah. We do.
We do.
We do. But I got asked a lot more questions than normally. They're just interested in how much luggage I bring.
Why is that?
US. Because I overpack. Every time I come over, I overpack. And yeah, they're just interested in, you got a lot of luggage for 3 days away, ma'am. I'm like, yeah, I'm a girl.
Yeah, there you go.
That's my answer.
That should satisfy them. Well, we hope you get to Brooklyn, and we hope to see, I know I'll be seeing you again in 2013.
Yes.
We're looking forward to that. And an hour has flown by, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
For the time, and I want to take this opportunity to once again thank our sponsor, the delightful Shutterstock.
Shutterstock.
I've got to get a little snippet of you saying that. That's great.
I feel like I need to do your voicemail for you.
That would be great.
Like a Bond girl of some kind.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, goodbye, and goodbye, everybody.